1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. I can't say where Alex lives, who's on the phone to us. One, because he doesn't have an exact address. Alex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How long have you been living in the woods?
For about 2 years now, 2.5 years now.
2 years?
Yeah.
And what is your accommodation in these woods in rural Ireland?
Well, it's very uncomfortable. It's very... our safe is very light. Anything can happen with the storms and...
Okay, it's a long gander. Can you hear me, Alex?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. You live in a tent in woods, and how do you survive for money?
Yes, thank you for the question. So basically, I have a partner who lives in Netherlands, and we have also a child together. So she's been here last 7th of August. So she's assisting me. I also have friends. Who kind of assisted me? So,
okay, we're trying. Obviously, the fact that you're living in a woods means that there is difficulty with the phone line. Stay there, Alex. Brian Moriarty is a man who contacted us and put us in touch with Alex. Brian, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Joe? How are things?
Can you tell us about Alex, please? Now, obviously, we don't want to know where exactly he's living for reasons that will become obvious. But go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I'm just worried about him because I've known him for a few years. Just meeting him. I met him through kind of philosophy meetings that I used to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I realized he was looking for work and he wasn't didn't have a permanent place to live. But that this has been going on for like a number of years now. And I was completely shocked when I met him last weekend that it's still no progress with visas or he's still in the same situation. You know, I feel very sad for him. And
and tell us about his... Don't give us a location, obviously. It's in Leinster. It's in a woodland in Leinster, outside the capital. But what are his living conditions? Have you actually gone into the woods and seen where he lives?
No, I haven't. I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look comfortable. It looks really, really hard living. And it's damp there. I know that he's mentioned damp. There's mice there. They're eating through the tent. So I'm going to give him a tent that I have spare. And just it's up on a mountain and he's isolated on his own. A local person did come across him, spotted him, and did offer him a place to have a shower and clean himself and provide him with a spare sleeping bag. But other than that, it's very harsh conditions for someone to be living for that long.
And he's living in the, as you say, hidden in the woods in rural Ireland. He has a mobile phone for a start, hasn't he? Obviously, it's a bad line, but he's on the other line.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. Like, that keeps him connected to the world, you know? And I mean, I guess he can keep in contact with people but he has no permanent address or no address, unfortunately.
And is he illegal in Ireland, so to speak?
I don't know the full situation with his visa. I don't know, but all I know is he's looking to get a full-time visa.
Okay. Well, let me see, you hang on there, Brian.
On humanitarian reasons, yeah.
Say there, if you would, Brian. Alex, tell us what country you're from, what age group you are, and how did you come to Ireland?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, okay, perfect. So I'm originally from Cameroon, which is Central Africa. And so I came here after I got my master's degree. So I came to... I went first to England where I get a volunteer visa to work for people who have mental disabilities. So I stayed there and then I had a lot of trainings and then after that, I moved to Ireland in the same organization. And then I had a visa as well for a year. And after the visa expired, then I become undocumented. And because there was sending my mom got cancer, and you know, this was involving a lot of cost. Okay. And the situation in Cameroon.
And Alex, just to be clear, you're undocumented in Ireland, so you're here illegally in that sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And are you in hiding in this wood?
I'm not. I think, of course, if you walk on the street, you won't see me because, it's pretty. You have to walk a little. It's not too far from the street, but it's probably, I don't know, 100 meters from the street. But
From a road.
And actually, there's some road work going on right now. He didn't go for a while, but right now there's some road works going on. Mm-hmm. So that's why maybe you can hear in the background some trucks noise.
And Alex, how do you obviously you have no address, you're illegal in Ireland, so to speak, so you can't sign on, you can't get the dole or community assistance. How do you survive, and what do you eat, and what's your daily routine?
So basically, as I said a bit earlier, so I have my partner who lives in the Netherlands and who assists me financially. I also have Brian, who is right now on the online, who also very, very, very good help. Anyway, all the time, he's always there, watches me if I need anything. I also have a neighbor who is a social worker who also spot me once, and then he offered me to go to his house to have a shower or to have a laundry or stuff like that. And sometimes he don't eat me food as well.
Okay. And do you have how much do you need each week to survive financially?
Well, basically, I think if more or less 20, 25 euro, I can survive for a full month.
25 euro a month?
Yeah. I mean, I live very, very simple, as I can say. And, of course, also, as I said, sometimes people bring me food. So, so financially, it's not very...
Have you any way of cooking your food in these woods?
Yes, I got a stove. Little stove that I use for cooking. So sometimes it also help me during winter when it's very, very, very cold. So I can also turn it on a bit.
It's very, very cold.
Just bring down the cold. Yeah.
Brian, why are you especially... I know you have been worried about Alex, but why are you especially worried about him now, Brian?
I'm just worried, like over time, your spirits might get a bit low after being away from people and just like in them conditions, you know. I mean, I think it's fine, like short term, like he's a tough guy and he's able to manage. But I mean, long term, it's just there's no progress in terms of visas, and you know, I don't want to see him stuck there for too long. And just wondering if anyone could guide him, give him guidance for how does he get in contact with the right people, you know?
And Alex, would you go into a direct provision centre if you had to?
Yes, of course. What happened is that I did, because the story as well is that at some point, because my mom passed away 3 years ago, so I get lost a bit in my mind because I was her only son and stuff like that, so I ended up giving assist to the funeral, so it kind of messed me little bit, and I had a daughter who was coming on the way as well. So those three events kind of shake me a little bit, and I said, okay, it's better to
it's a bit hard. Apart from anybody who came across you accidentally, has anyone come into the woods to visit you? I don't know.
Absolutely. So there's a social worker actually that I met. Retired professional social worker that I met. He came here. I mean, he spotted me always going up and down the hill, and so he knew that probably I must be camping somewhere. So then he came to meet me once, twice, and then he invited me to his house. And because I make an application, because I first make an application to return to Cameroon. After some time, because I was a bit I wanted to stop everything and just go back to Cameroon. But of course, I have the daughter on the other side, and as well, the Cameroon situation is very bad right now because of the health and security is going on. There's two wars going on, there's one in the north and in the south. Mm. So it's pretty pretty shaky over there right there. So I asked the organization if they can ensure my safety once I'm back in Cameroon. They said they couldn't ensure my safety. So I then have to apply to the immigration department for leave to remain on humanitarian grounds. So which I made in March 2018, and still I'm waiting for any updates. The social worker also sent references on my behalf just to have the application, but. Yeah.
Okay. Let me bring. We need to get a better line or greater clarity. Janet, good afternoon.
Oh, hello, Joe.
You're listening to Alex, who's living in the woods. It has been for 2 years. He sent us photographs. I don't know if we've permission. It doesn't identify where, but it's Bear Grylls. He's buried in the middle of a wood somewhere.
Mm. Well, it is a dreadful situation, but I live around Stillorgan, and my immediate reaction to hearing was, my goodness, you don't have to go into the woods to see people in this sort of situation. You only have to go as far as Stillorgan. 2 minutes from Stillorgan Shopping Centre will bring you to two different places of accommodation that people have set up for themselves. One is on the road from Blackrock to Stillorgan, and the other is actually was in Stillorgan village until the area in question is being redeveloped, and as a result of that the tent that had been set up has been removed.
And those tents along the canal, there was tents in near the seafront in Clontarf, there was tents the Phoenix Park. I take your point.
All over. We don't have to go into the woods anymore, and it's incredible to think
it's incredible that this man went into the woods 2 years ago and has been living there ever since. And I'm looking, he's given us the address. I'm looking at it on Google Earth. He's in the middle of, he will never be found. He will never be, except accidentally. Now, he mentioned a man has come across him. And that man, I'm told, is on the line. His name for today on the programme is Peter. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How did you come across? I'm good, thanks, and I hope you are as well, Peter. How did you come across Alex, as we're calling him? We know that's not his name.
Yeah, accidentally.
Yeah.
Completely accidentally. I noticed him travelling the roads and on his bike and bicycle.
Yeah.
And stopped him one day and suggested I could give him a luminous vest, as he didn't or wasn't wearing one.
High vis, fair play.
Because I had passed him in the dark once or twice, and it certainly wasn't safe.
Yeah, yeah.
And gradually we developed a bit of a friendship. I see him regularly. He calls to my home on a regular basis, and he has a shower and he has a meal and he fixes his bike or he does a few bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so much interested in what I offer him, but I'm far more interested in his plight.
Yeah.
I've tried advocating on his behalf, though not too significantly. I wouldn't want to claim any credit there, but I did contact the appropriate department on two occasions.
Okay.
And explained his plight to them. That really didn't go anywhere, because all contact with the appropriate department is through email, so there's no personal contact by phone. So I did advocate on his behalf, but as I said, it came to nothing much, really. But his circumstances are fairly dire.
Mm.
We did explore the possibility of him moving into the appropriate, I forget what they're called again, the support...
sheltered housing or supported living.
No, not so much the sheltered housing, but the centres that are located around the country.
Direct provision.
My apologies, provision. And he'd be quite worried about going into that, really, you know, because of the rules and regulations that apply in those centres.
And Alex, have you been into the woods to see where he lives? Peter, have you been into the woods? Like, would could people stumble across him accidentally, or is he completely buried in the woods?
No, not too easily. You couldn't stumble across him too easily. You'd have to know his location pretty clearly.
And how does he find his way back to his tent every night?
Or every day?
You get used
to it.
you'd get very used to it if you're living in the same location for 2 years. I would imagine you'd find it blindfolded, you know.
And were you surprised, Peter, when you heard from Alex that he was living there for 2 years?
I was surprised. Yes, I was, yeah. I think the conditions he's living in are appalling.
And you want to, can you describe them to him? He has a tent. I see that photograph. It's a.
I can, yeah. He's living in a very small tent with another part of a tent as a roof over it.
Yeah.
It's the tent itself wouldn't be windproof. Mm-hmm. So it's just rainproof, really, I suppose. I had access to sleeping bags and stuff like that, so I've given him a couple of sleeping bags and a ground mat and stuff like that. I feel quite guilty, I suppose, that I haven't offered him anything more than that, really. So it's tough. It's a tough existence.
How far from the nearest house is he, do you reckon?
I'm reluctant to answer that, Joe, because it might
give him away.
I might give him away.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. But he goes to you to charge his phone, which is his only communication with you. Obviously, he's no address, so he can't get post. He can't sign on. He can't. So you help him charge his mobile phone, have a shower every now and again.
Yeah, well, he has a weekly shower here, and we cook a meal together, and he charges up all his electrics.
Yeah,
and he's very welcome here, and I'm not the only one in the locality, really. One or two other people,
great,
you know him well by this stage and have also fed him, and would stop for him on the road and would have a chat with him and would invite him in for a cup of tea.
There's
a small number of locals in the area would do that for him.
Very good.
And he knows them by name and they know him by name.
Okay.
And he's a very decent guy, actually, well-educated.
Very well. He has a master's. He's a master's degree in trade and distribution from the Catholic University of Central Africa.
Yeah.
He worked in England. Then he got a position in Naas, Galway, Cork and Dublin.
Yeah.
He was obviously trade and distribution. Yeah.
So since his arrival in Ireland, his paperwork, his problem really is that his paperwork has expired.
Yeah.
So he's here illegally, although he has applied for leave to remain. And that's in the pipeline now, I think, almost 2 years.
And when you try and get information on that, Peter, how do you fare?
Yeah. I've tried, very poorly.
Yeah.
Very poorly, because, as I said, there's no direct communication with the appropriate department except through email.
Yeah.
And generally, the response to the emails are a general form of response that anyone would get if they were.
Yeah.
You know, I've written and posted a letter by email to the department, but it didn't get, as I said, it didn't get much of a response. I've been given some thought recently, maybe to taking it a bit further through maybe our local politicians, some of whom are fairly high-ranking. But I'm not sure if they have any power or authority to
speak
on behalf of an individual.
If Alex comes out of the woods, so to speak, he will be sent back to Cameroon, won't he?
Well, maybe it wouldn't be too bad if he did get sent back to Cameroon.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But it's really not what he wants. I don't want to say much more about him because that's divulging personal information.
Yeah, yeah, you're very conscious.
If he wants to reveal that, he can.
Yeah.
But at least if he got leave to remain, he could then get part-time employment and he could then maybe begin to access documentation.
And services.
And with documentation, he could then travel.
Yeah.
His desire may not be to stay in Ireland. I'm not too sure about that.
And Peter, have you ever come around? You ever come across anyone else living in the woods? I've looked. In this circumstance, or is it unique to Ireland in 2019?
I know, yeah. That was the point I made, actually, to the department in a letter.
Yeah.
That in Ireland of 2019, this was an appalling setup and an appalling situation. But it got a standard response.
Okay, let me bring in Arthur Cronin, 51551joe@rt.ie. Arthur, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Herbert Park in the centre of Dublin. I saw it named the other day by Dublin City Council as our most prestigious park, which is a funny way of putting it. But anyway, they said it's nice, a D4. Yeah. What did you come across in Herbert Park, Arthur?
Well, Joe, I moved to Dublin a few years ago for work, and I worked in a fairly prestigious banking institution up there in Bulbridge, and I was lucky enough to have an apartment overlooking Herbert Park, which is beautiful. I'm back down in Cork now for business reasons, but about 4 years ago I noticed that there was a chap had begun sitting on the new entrance, they call it, by the Herbert Park Hotel the park. And he was sitting there under a covered, the covered kind of benches. And he used to sit there, and every day he was there. And over time, he wasn't moving, and he grew some stuff around him and a sleeping bag and things. And I was kind of got a bit worried about him, and I went down to check in with him just to see was everything okay. And turns out he had very limited English. He was here as a migrant of some kind, and he just couldn't figure out anything. It was all a big, huge shock to him, you know. And my heart went out to him because I thought, like, what must this guy have gone through to, you know, to become a migrant to our country, my country, you know? And he had very, very limited English. He was very shy. He would spend his days literally sitting under the covers, like hiding from the Irish weather. That he was probably another shock to him. But I remember I got so concerned about him. I engaged with the homeless services and the various different fantastic, wonderful charities around Dublin that do so much, and they put him on their list to go out and check in with him and everything. But like I just thought he was in such shock at the situation he found himself in, you know, that he didn't know how to engage at all. He limited English. He had God knows what kind of mental scars going on in his mind. It got so bad at one stage, like two winters and everything. He moved in one summer, and it was two winters, a really bad winter. I got so concerned. I went down to him. I got him blankets. I gave him hot soup and sandwiches. I used to do that regularly just to make sure he was fed. And like the businesses around Ballsbridge were all great. I'd pop into them and say to them, I'm just getting a sandwich for the guy over in the park. And they'd be like, no problem at all. And they'd make an extra big sandwich for him. And, you know, they'd charge me nothing.
Arthur, where did he live in the park? Do you know?
In the little covered archway. That's the entrance into the park, overlooking the bandstand and the lake. That's where he lived.
There's no shelter there.
No shelter from the wind or anything. Just the rain. And literally, like he was just there all the time. I mean, Joe, he used to spend his days staring out at the bandstand and the lake. And it's beautiful. The little pond is beautiful. It's a beautiful place to go and walk around. But to spend your entire life just staring at it,
Have you seen him recently, Arthur? Does anyone know? Well, is he still?
I haven't been back up to Dublin in about a year, and I don't know if he's still there. And I'd love to know if he's not still there. That's what I'd love to know, Joe. That he's moved on, that he's been taken on and taken into somewhere where it suits him. It suits, you know, rather than I suppose the system making him suit it. I would love to know that, you know, the system adapted so that it now suits him, you know. And Joe, this is in D4. This is in the richest suburb of Ireland. And still we have homelessness. Even in the heart of the richest suburb in Ireland. And this began a few years ago, and still nothing was done. There was never, like, I suppose our services don't adapt to deal with the people's situation. They are what they are. They're struggling. They're under-resourced. They're understaffed. The people there do fantastic work. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bringing them down at all, Joe. But there are so many kinds of people out there that it's, you know, hearing that story earlier about that chap Alex and out in wherever he is, that just reminded me of this chap. He was so shy, he never even told me his name. I think he felt so bad of the situation he found himself in that he just closed up totally inside his own heart and his own mind.
Yeah.
You know, and Joe, it was so sad. And I just, you know, I couldn't believe here was me living in this fancy apartment in D4 with a wonderful job and all the friends I needed and anybody I could call on, click their fingers away. And there was this chap who was there, you know, I pass him every day, two or three times a day. You know, so and
totally alone so by the sounds of it.
Totally alone. Yeah. Even though people reached out to him,
yeah,
it was almost yourself, like it wasn't enough, Joe, you know. So
stay with us for a sec, Arthur. Alex, I'll try and get Alex back in. Alex, is it very lonely living in the woods on your own like that?
Yeah, it's very lonely. It's very, very lonely. And you just survive and mm-hmm. pray every day that nothing bad happened to you, because of course you never know who can pass by. And it's really lonely. It's very lonely. And
what would you like to do now, Alex? Where would you like to live? Would you like to go back to your native country? I know you said there's a war on there and internecine strife. And
the thing is that in Cameroon right now, as I said, there's very lot of trouble going on, and even people like me who live abroad can be targeted because of a lot of trouble going on the ground. They think that is the people from abroad, diaspora, who kind of, you know, stir up things from abroad because they want government change and stuff like that. So even people who go back to Cameroon now, sometimes I get arrested at the airport. So there's all those risks to take in account. And, of course, the strong link right now as well is with Ireland. And, of course, as I said, to be a father is something new as well. And, you just want to be able to be there close to your family and be able to assist, because it's not as well easy for,
Okay. I'm going to keep Alex with us for as long as we can on the line, and other people want to talk about us. Other people, they've come across living in tents. Alex, Alex and his friend Brian have contacted us. Alex lives in a ward in Ireland, has been living there in a tent for 2 years. Obviously, has no address, from the Cameroon originally, and if he's no address, you can't apply for any services. And some local people, as you heard, that wonderful man Peter has came across him. And he walks a good few kilometres every week to his house for a shower and a hot meal. 51551 Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. We've been contacted by a friend of Alex, who's now on the line. Alex has been living in the woods in rural Ireland for 2 years, as his friend Peter. Someone who came across, and Peter, who contacted us as well, thankfully, he said where he is living is almost impenetrable, extraordinarily difficult to find. I suppose that's why he's been there for 2 years. He's living in a tent which has been eaten by mice and various other vermin, and he manages on €25 a month. He obviously can't claim any services because he doesn't have an address, and his visa has expired, originally from the Cameroon. His friend Brian also contacted us, and Brian is worried about the effect that this type of living is having on this man after 2 years. Alex, by the way, is in his 30s. Anne Bourne. Anne, good afternoon.
Hello.
What have you witnessed?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Anne.
Well, I'm afraid Alex's case isn't unusual. There's several people living in wooded areas and in, you know, and around the slopes of Brayhead. Some of them been there for 2 or 3 years. Others, some others come and go. But I know the homeless shelter in Bray was closed down earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may have made it worse. I mean, I know there's people who've come across as around the town as well. But there are people living in situations where they're miles from the nearest supply of water or from any kind of help if they were in difficulty. It can't be safe for them.
Yeah. Now, well, if you hear, I know, I understand Brayhead, and it's awful, and it's very exposed as well, as the weather as the weather gets worse from here on in. But Anna, have you heard of anyone that's living miles from civilization, buried in a?
He's possibly safer that way.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
he's out of range of because the problem around he's out. At least he's probably he would be out of range of the sort of outdoor drinking parties. But I mean, how did we get to a stage they tell us we have a good economy, we have people living under hedges, you know, as if we were back in the 1840s.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, well, we shut down the homeless centre and we don't need to build houses because the market's going to sort it out. How did we ever get the country into such a complete and utter mess?
Well, in fairness, Anne, is it that countries like the Cameroon are in complete and utter mess and people are fleeing those countries?
Some of the people that I see are local.
Okay, yeah.
I know one young girl is local and she's been sleeping out under a hedge since last February. And she says she's tried talking to the council and she gets nowhere. There's nothing they can do for her.
And the people living in Brayhead, what do they do for water? And
that's what I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to carry it a hell of a distance, and it's heavy stuff. I don't know how they cope. Now, in most cases, I'm afraid I keep my distance.
Why do you say I'm afraid I keep my distance?
Well, I suppose I heard the other guy, he just walked in and offered help.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be afraid to do that. Hmm. Yeah, with people, like with strangers. In a lonely place where there's no one else around, you know. Yeah. Now, 99% of them might be grand.
I'm still trying to work out if Alex would... Alex, do you feel like you're a fugitive from the law, or would you like to come out and go to the authorities? Do you understand me, Alex?
Yeah, I understand your question. I don't... When I was undocumented, I figure I'm still undocumented, but before I went forward and say, okay, I want to probably the best is for me to go back to Cameroon. So, yeah, I gave my information to the authorities, and since then, I'm more or less in contact with the authorities. I send emails and to know exactly what's the status of the application, and yeah, so I'm waiting for any response from the authority. So I'm not in hiding from the authority. Before when you're undocumented, of course, you didn't come out again. Of course, you're scared and you all have, psychologically, you are not in balance. You never have peace of mind and stuff like that.
Where you are in these woods, Alex? I know it's deep in the woods, but is it dangerous? Are there any...
I've never been harmed since I'm here.
Okay.
But I can say sometimes you have, shooting season or something like that going on. So sometimes it can be, people are hunting or something like that, so it can be a bit...
Well, are there deer? Do you know, have you seen deer in these woods?
No, not yet. Okay. Just a few foxes.
And you've spent two winters there. What's it like there in the winter?
It's very tough. It's very cold, obviously.
Can you light a fire?
I can still use my stove because it's inside the tent.
Okay.
And Peter provided me with additional sleeping bags.
He's very good.
Yeah, he can manage.
And I'm told one of the local churches, the Methodist Church, come up with some food every now and again.
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. Where's Bridget? Bridget, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Oh, don't tell me. That poor man is still in Herbert Park.
I'm just listening to that man that spoke earlier on. And my name is Bridget and I'm from Thurles. But I was in Dublin over the weekend as well. And we were staying in that hotel.
The Herbert Park, yeah.
Yeah, and I walked through the park, we'll say, over 2 days, early one morning. And I'm sure it's the same man because I tried to talk to him and he had no English whatsoever. But he was staring. This is only this weekend, and he was staring right into the lake. So I kept surfing the lake, and I just found it profoundly disturbing because that was early in the morning. And then, like, as that your previous speaker said, like Dublin 4, oh my God, like Dublin was abuzz with the match.
Of course, yeah.
And even that evening, then I went walking again, and he was still sitting there staring into the lake. You couldn't engage with him. But what I found it more disturbing that evening was there was a sort of a street festival going on in a part of the Herbert Park, which is cornered off. But there was such live music and real festive atmosphere. But this poor man, he didn't lift his eyes out of the water. And the following morning then, it was early, about 8 o'clock in the morning, I was walking as well, because the more than others, I felt so... I couldn't get him off my mind because the previous evening I'd met our son and daughter in Dublin. We went to a beautiful restaurant for a meal that we had to book. And Dublin was so busy. It was just... And then to see the other side of it. But the following morning then I was walking as well and I just kept circling the lake again, just trying to catch his attention. But as I walked, somebody handed him a coffee cup with coffee in it.
Very good, yeah.
But... he just had it in his hand. Now, I didn't even see him drink out of it, but he was wrapped up in blankets. But what got me was his gaze into the lake.
The mental strain must be...
Oh, my God.
Language, loneliness, the elements, the insecurity.
Everything. But he didn't even when I just tried to talk to him, I just had it out to him, and he didn't even lift his eyes, like... He just stood there staring into the lake. I just found it profoundly disturbing. And... like, there's so many, it's a beautiful area, Dublin, and so many runners and walkers. But what I found is that even kids I saw oblivious to him. You know, we're all oblivious to him. I just found it profoundly disturbing, and I couldn't get him off my mind for the whole week.
Okay. Thanks, Bridget. 51551. Art O'Leary is in Bray. Art, good afternoon.
Well, I can't add any more to what that woman said earlier, but I mean... I know there are several people around here. There's a group of people that go around, kind of an informal rota. We go around every night with the soup and sandwiches.
This is in the Bray area?
Around Bray,
yeah. Okay.
And we meet fellas. And we do things like, basically we just bring around coffee and sandwiches, but they ask us for things like, we get asked for things like tents or sleeping bags or charging mobile phones, this kind of thing, you know. Sometimes we get them more clothes.
Yeah.
There's a few cafes donate food, so there's lots of people trying to help.
Yeah, I know.
But it's a disgraceful situation. So where,
insofar as this makes any difference, though, I see from
a winter shelter set up and it's closed down again. And talk of houses being open for them, but like there's a big problem and very little been done about it.
Well, the winter is coming at us fast at this stage. I think it's 15 degrees to tomorrow. But Art, insofar as you know, and insofar as it makes any difference, do you know where these people are from originally? Do you get any sense of... Are they like Alex, who came from the Cameroon, his visa ran out,
there's one particular guy who's from somewhere in Eastern Europe, but most of the people we're coming across... are Irish. There was another guy from Eastern Europe. We saw him for a while last year. I think maybe he went back. I'm not sure what happened to him.
Yeah.
But at the moment, most of the people we're seeing are locals. Irish.
Let me bring
There's one guy who sounds Scottish.
Let me bring in Nicholas. Sorry. Nicholas, good afternoon. Back to this man who's in the Herbert Park in Dublin 4. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you. Yes, myself and my wife would be in Herbert Park every so often. And we always see him around the bandstand area where your earlier gentleman was talking about. And he would be in a sleeping bag all the time, either sitting or lying in a sleeping bag, either on the seat, on a seat, or in the bandstand itself, maybe just looking straight ahead. Now, we have spoken to him every time we've been there, and we brought some stuff for him as well, too, and delighted with all that as well. But he doesn't have facilities to wash. He is French.
Yeah.
Well, he was born in France. He's a coloured man. He's a coloured gentleman. He's here 4 years. And he lives in Herbert Park, between the two parks, you know, the side of, yeah, of the lake park.
It's separated
and
by a road, yeah, the two sides,
yeah, exactly,
of the park.
Yeah, yeah.
But Nicholas, if he's from France, sure he's entitled to services here in the
EU. We asked him, you know, does he get support from... now, he doesn't speak a lot of English, but he does speak some English. Okay. I'm not 100% sure if he fully understands what we would be saying as well, too. Probably if he speaks slow, he can probably grasp what you're saying, okay. We asked him, does he get support from... And he said, well, just people, you know, come to him
like
and
yourself,
give him stuff, like food or... money or that, and he's delighted with that, and more than delighted with that. But support from like social welfare, that no, doesn't get anything, doesn't have a bus pass, and if he goes anywhere, he's got to walk. So, where do you wash or go to the toilet? I go into town, I had to get into town, I walk into town. I don't know where in town. Because to be honest, I'm afraid to ask them too many questions, and I don't want him to think that we're you know, prying into him. But I feel very, very sorry for him, and like he's been there all through last year with the very bad snow that we had, and he's just there all the time. Just lives there all the time. And I don't know how he's surviving. We asked him like, how does he? What happens when he gets sick? He says, I haven't got sick. I don't get sick. So, but I mean, I don't know. I don't think he can be healthy 100% all the time.
But how would your Nicholas? How would your mental health survive that?
Well, that's another thing too. My wife said, like, he must have his scars mentally would be severe. He is quiet. He's very, very quiet.
Yeah.
But he's very intelligent, person. He looks well. He looks well. Has a bit of a beard, but it's not a bad beard. It's well looked after beard, if you know what I mean. And his teeth are really white as well too. He's a harmless person. And we asked him, you know, did you have any trouble from anybody? And he said no. You don't know really. My wife is in here. We've taken heart to him. Your heart will go out to him when you see him.
I hear that from the two of you. Yeah.
It's terrible to see, really. Like, you know, I don't know what we can do to help him even more. You know, bring him stuff is fine, but to help him get back on his feet. When he walked in France, he walked in a shop. He was saying, he told us, he came across here on a boat. So probably, you know, Stena or Line or something like that, and he's here 4 years. And he's never worked here. How he actually came across in the boat, I don't know.
But do you get a sense that is he so cast down that he doesn't have the energy to engage with the services, or the desire, or maybe the ability?
I'm not sure.
Because we seldom talk about the mental toll that being in that situation must take on people. You've nowhere to sleep, you've nowhere to live, and everything that comes down like a waterfall on top of you, all the domino effect of that.
Absolutely. I'm not really too sure, to be honest. I'd say mentally he is tormented very, very, very badly, I would say. As your previous caller said too, you're staring into the lake. He would be looking just straight ahead, basically. Now, he's very aware of people around him, or very aware of his surroundings and all that. So, he knows where he is. He knows, apparently, how he can get from A to B. So he has to go into town. He walks into town. So, you know, in that sense, he's okay too.
Okay.
But
okay, you're very good. You're very good, Nicholas, and your wife there in the background. Thanks indeed for your common humanity, which you're showing. That's Nicholas and his wife. There's more people who want to talk about what they're witnessing after this break. 51551joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rte.ie, we've been contacted on his behalf and by Alex, who's from Cameroon, the Republic of Cameroon in Central Africa. He's been living in a wood somewhere in rural Ireland for obvious reasons. We don't want to give out the location. For the last 2 years in a tent. Obviously, he's no address and has no access to services, doesn't want to go into direct provision and is not keen to go back to Cameroon either. Let me bring in Victor. Good afternoon, Victor.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. You drive a bus for Bus Air, and I presume the National Bus Company, is it? Whatever the company, that doesn't matter, yeah.
Yeah, just I've been listening since the start of the item there in relation to people living in the woods and living in Herbert Park and so forth. And, you know, in my day-to-day work, one of the saddest things that I would see on a regular basis, you see the same faces of people travelling regularly from point to point with you. And there are faces who travel with us overnight or on late services and early services back, and they're clearly legal, if you like, in terms of they have travel passes, travel benefits. But the only thing I can surmise, Joe, is that they're travelling regularly on buses to have a safe place for the night.
Wow.
And I think it's just, when you said about Ireland in 2019, it just struck a chord with me because it's something that I would come across on a regular basis in terms of doing my work.
So people get on the late night intercity bus services because they know for 3 or 4 hours when they're on the road, they'll have a bit of heat and shelter.
Yeah, absolutely. And often at the end of the journey, you're actually waking them up to say, we're here. You know, that kind of way.
And are they heading back on the next bus or whatever?
They might, or you might be picking them up on an early service in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of way. You know, it strikes me as just indicative of the country and the states that we're in, that we have all of these first world problems, if you like, but that when people are getting on a bus late at night and, you know, travelling back the following morning on a regular basis, you can't pry into people's circumstances, if you like. They'll talk to you if they want to talk to you. But I would often say to them, you know, are you okay? I haven't seen you in a while or whatever. And one guy said to me, oh, he says, I thought your work pattern had changed or something like that, you know. Mm. But you do, it's the same people, the same faces, and it's just, it just struck a chord with me when I heard of the chap living in the woods.
Okay, Victor, and safe travelling. John Nolan, John, good afternoon. You're listening to Alex from Cameroon, living in the woods. Yeah. For the last 2 years. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm prepared to make that guy an offer to give him a one-way ticket back to the Cameroon, because he'd be far better off living there in the heat than living in a forest in the cold here in the depths of winter.
And have you been in Central Africa, John?
Yeah, I've lived there and worked there in the mining industry for a good many years.
Okay.
And with his qualifications, they're screaming out for people like him.
He's a master's degree in trade and distribution.
I'm telling you, he will walk into any job with any mining company. They'd be delighted to have him.
And have you been in Cameroon?
No, I've been in the Congo.
Well, is the Congo not riven? Is the Congo not extraordinarily dangerous at the moment?
Well, the Congo is always dangerous and has been for the past 100 years.
Well, let me say, Alex, this man, John Nolan, and we verified him, he's willing to help you if you want to go back to Cameroon. Do you want to go back to Cameroon, Alex, do you think?
Well, as I said, there's a security and safety issue there. And definitely the country is not at the moment safe, as I was explaining. Mm-hmm. Recently in Switzerland, the diaspora in Cameroon make sure that the president who was living there get kicked out of Switzerland. So what I'm saying is a real threat for the diaspora right now, because they're organizing themselves to make sure that there's a government change in Cameroon, and there's a big movement going on. Last time in France, they went to the embassy and they broke the embassy completely. So there's a big threat on the diaspora right now. So I'd be willing to go back to Cameroon, but as I'm saying, there's a higher risk that I'll be stopped at the airport and, you know, interrogated and stuff like that. People are being arrested because there was a last election in 2018, October, and see that election, there's a lot of turmoil in the country. You know, people are contesting and people are being arrested and stuff like that. So it's become very, very violent. And above that, there's two wars going on, one in the north and one in the southwest country. So it's not as if I was on my own, I think I would just go. But right now, I have someone on my back. I have a daughter and I have a partner and all those stuff. You cannot just make a decision as easy as that. So that's why I think for my safety, it's preferable for me to at least the time for the situation to get to get settled in Cameroon.
Okay, and anyone who reads up on Cameroon, there is an armed conflict. They're separatists declaring their independence of Ambazonia. And Boko Haram, those savage terrorists, have spread into Cameroon from Nigeria, where they were kidnapping, as you know, the whole school role of 200 women, and that's just the beginning of it. John, do you understand what Alex is saying in terms he's reluctant?
Yes. Well, listen. Well, the next suggestion is
okay.
Why doesn't he? Would he not consider going to Johannesburg, which is the mining hub of Africa, and you would pick a job up there with the drop of a hat, and they would organise visas, they would organise everything, maybe for East Africa, West Africa, Ghana, Namibia, South Africa.
Alex, would you?
Well, right now, I don't need my passport has expired, so, and there's no Cameroon embassy over here. Okay. And as I said
how long more can you stay after 2 years living in woods, 8, 9, 10 kilometers from the nearest house? How long can you stay living there? Your health, your mental health, your physical health.
Absolutely, I cannot prejudge, honestly, because it's my first time going through this experience. So it's brand new for me, and every day is a new day, and you have to find a new strength, and it's a discovery, and it's painful. Mm. And
but what about John? What about John's point that you might be better off going back, not home necessarily, but to where there's some job prospects?
Well, if there's any opportunities, but the other things for me is as well is that. The main priority for me is to be close to my daughter. So if I can.
Yeah, who's in the Netherlands with your partner?
There's no point for me going miles away.
I know it's complicated. John, you worked in the mining industry, did you?
That's correct. Yeah.
And you were in Africa for the most.
I was there about 15 years in total.
Very good. Okay. And have you retired now, or are you working?
I'm my working days are over.
Alrighty, okay. Is that by choice?
No. Ah. By health reasons.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, John. Well done. It's a generous offer. And I think you're right. Alex has to start looking at his options, and the option can't be living in Bear Grylls land in the middle of a wood 8 kilometres from the nearest house.
I think Joe, really what he wants to do is he wants to stay in Europe. That's the problem.
He's using
all the leverage he can get, including your programme.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But it was, in fairness, it was Brian, his friend, who's still there, who's very worried about him. And I think he has raised the issue, John, of the mental pressure that people. When we think of homelessness, we think of the material wants.
Yes.
But there's obviously, as we can imagine this through our common humanity, the mental pressure, as we're hearing about various other people, is enormous. Okay, John Nolan, Gurumi Lamahagut, John.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. 51551. Am I saying goodbye to Alex? Alex, I'm saying goodbye to you at the moment, and I hope things work out well. Brian, are you anyway, like, the, Brian, who's a friend of Alex, who contacted us. Brian, John Nolan's point is almost that anything has to be better than living in the woods for 2 years. You there, Brian?
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I see his point, but...
I know it's complicated. I know it's complicated.
It's complicated due to the fact that there is a daughter involved and he does have close ties to her, even though she's living in another country now. They did meet in Ireland, and Rudolf has his time in Ireland, has a deep connection with Ireland and does like living here and being here in Europe. So it's...
Okay.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's tricky.
Alex, look after yourself, Alex, and go safely. You have a lot of people who, as I say, only came across you in the woods and are willing to help. So, Alex, thanks indeed, and mind yourself. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.